Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty along with my brother Darren. Well, today on the show, we're going to talk a little about managing soybean cyst nematode, but we'll get to a number of other topics for you as well today if you are not a soybean farmer. And, you know, we'll get into the soybean cyst nematode thing in just a minute. I'm kind of excited to talk about that. But if you've got any questions for us or if there is anything you'd like to discuss that that is going on in your farm right now, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag in just a few minutes here. But before we do, I'll start you out. Just three key things I've got for you today on soybean cyst nematode. And we will talk about it off and on throughout the show today. But let's say you don't raise soybeans. And you might be wondering, well, why do I need to pay attention to this? Because we're talking about nematodes. And nematodes, unfortunately, are in every field. It's just a question of how many harmful nematodes are there. And is there anything you should be doing about them? So when I was in college even, and I had this internship, I was working for FMC, and I had to go all throughout South Dakota and into northern Nebraska. So I grew up on a farm in South Dakota, probably about 100 miles away from the state of Nebraska. Well, I'd never spent much time down there or anything, and I certainly hadn't spent time down on farms. Well, when I did this internship, I had to go down there, talk to a lot of farmers and agronomists and everything, and retailers, and they were talking to me a lot about nematodes in corn. And I'm going, what? You guys have major problems with nematodes in corn? And a lot of guys are like, oh, yeah, it's way worse than the rootworms that I have. So anyway, that was my first introduction to nematodes in a crop other than soybeans. And soybean cyst nematode is a major issue, really, almost anywhere soybeans are grown if they are raised on a fairly regular basis. So that leads me into my first point. Worst case scenario, you can always plant something else. Plant a non-host crop, like let's say it's corn or wheat. On our farm, for example, we will typically go corn for a while if we have issues with soybean cyst nematode, or primarily our issue is sclerotinia white mold. But either way, going corn for, let's say, 3 years dramatically reduces the problem. So that's the first thing I'd say. Worst case scenario, just rotate away from soybeans for a little while. Your nematode pressure will go down, and now it's going to get a lot easier. Okay, second thing, resistant soybeans. Now, there are two main traits out there. Rather than give you the numbers or anything, I'll just talk about Fayette and Peking. So the Fayette trait is what's in most soybeans that are out there today. And unfortunately, we are seeing more issues with this. In other words, the Fayette used to be really good for soybean cyst nematode. Well, now it's not as good. We're not getting as much gain. We're having more issues with reproduction in those nematode populations in the Fayette beans. And so that's our concern there. The Peking varieties over the years typically haven't yielded as well, and that's why most people raise the Fayette gene beans. But now we're seeing better yield in the Peking varieties, plus the fact that the Peking actually is working on cyst nematode. So that is obviously a big help. And then my third point is seed treatment. We'll talk about some seed treatments today. But the challenge with the seed treatment thing is, let's say you got an 80-acre field, and let's say 20 acres of it is loaded with cyst nematode. But the other 60 acres, you don't have any problem. Okay, well, how are you going to do that with your soybean seed treatment? Are you going to go plant one variety over the whole thing that's got treatment on the whole thing? Are you going to go plant the area where you have a problem with treated beans and plant the area with no problem without the treatment? Are you going to have a planter that will do multiple varieties? We have a planter that'll do two varieties as you go through the field. And this is where that thing really can pay for itself, because the seed treatment isn't going to do you a whole lot of good, or at least some of the treatments won't do you much good if there are no cyst nematodes out there. But in the heavy cyst nematode pressure areas, that's where obviously it will really help. All right, so again, we'll talk about managing SCN or soybean cyst nematode all throughout the show, but right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren. All right, Brian, first one here comes from Michael, and he's got 47 acres that he did 1 acre grids on. And he said this is fifth crop that he had out there, and he had been doing some bigger grids, but said this year he'd like to take a bigger swing at moving his fertility results, and he's going to make some nitrogen decisions after his soil testing in the spring. But wondering what you would still put on yet this fall in a broadcast and which nutrients you would prioritize.
Okay, well, first of all, if your ground is frozen, then it's too late. Now, sometimes in the middle of December, we get a nice warm-up, it thaws, you can go do tillage, you can put fertilizer on, but that would be my first concern. If it's frozen, you're too late, you got to wait till spring. But when I look at his soil tests, the first thing that we always take a look at is soil pH, and actually a lot of his stuff is really good. It's in the sixes, so there's a little bit that's down in the fives, so he needs just a touch of lime. But we talk often about P and K, that those are the first two nutrients we're typically looking at in the soil test, and in both cases, he's really low. So base saturation potassium down around 2, maybe 3, and phosphorus, we got a lot of 10, 20, maybe 30 parts per million. So both of those things need addressing. But then the other thing that we see on almost everybody's soil tests, sulfur's low, zinc's low, manganese low, copper low, boron low. So you need a lot of stuff. And when I say all those things, it sounds daunting, right? You go, oh my gosh, I can't spend $1,000 an acre on fertilizer. Look, I get it. And what we will tell you then is take a look at the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. Look at what your yield goal is. And I mean, what's your maximum yield goal is for corn? So if you normally raise 240 in Iowa, let's say you're pushing it to 270, okay? So at least you're fertilizing well, especially for the good areas of the field. So I'd be I would look at that, and then I'd be on a build program with a lot of these nutrients. And it looks like he's got a chicken litter sample here too. I'll just say that's one of the nice things with litter or manure. You get a lot of these micronutrients basically along for the ride. So that's a really good thing. So in his case, for example, got a fair amount of manganese and zinc there, just not much copper. So you might need to supplement a little bit more copper in addition to all the things we talked about already. Thanks for the question. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
The Pentair Hypro Express flush valve reduces plugged nozzles and improves cleanout of your spray boom. Simply flush boom sections with a quarter-turn ball valve and leave your tools in the cab. Plus, installation is easy. Simply remove the existing end cap plug and replace with the Hypro Express flush valve. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the end zone bin system from Farm Shop MFG.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You're looking for soybeans that give you the yield you want. But when it comes to fighting your toughest weeds, you also need flexibility. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics with triple tolerance to dicamba, glyphosate, and glufosinate. The yield you want, the choice you need. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about managing soybean cyst nematode, and I remember back when soybean cyst nematode wasn't even thought to be in our part of the country in South Dakota. And I remember going to a field where a farmer had been putting continuous soybeans on the corners of an irrigated field. And my goodness, he had just tremendous soybean cyst nematode pressure there. And that was 25 years ago at least. And here we are today where almost every farmer that I talk to that's planting soybeans is managing soybean cyst nematode. It's just been a terrible problem and continuing to spread. So looking for all the answers we can find today, we got Dare McDuffie with us with Valent to talk about it a little bit. Dare, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
We've got nematode-resistant soybeans, but boy, is there resistance building up or tolerance building up to those beans. So we're looking for other answers, and certainly seed treatment is a promising one for farmers. Talk to us a little bit about that. How do you go about finding things that work on nematodes like that? And then what are some of the challenges when you're doing that on the seed?
Certainly. Well, a lot of the innovation has more been happening on the nematode side than the nematode control side. Like you said, a lot of races of soybean cyst nematode are now able to reproduce on the primary sources of resistance that you get when you choose that correct variety. So they still are limited. So you still want to choose that correct variety. You still want that genetic source of resistance. But with something like seed treatment, we're looking to shore up that resistance, make sure it lasts longer, because we can find seed treatments. I think, unfortunately, there's not many options that are coming down the seed route for additional SCN control.
No, there sure aren't. And the challenge, too, with some of the other nematode trait type things that they've been finding, at least the seed breeders have been finding over the last generation or so, is there's yield drag associated with them. Well, nobody wants that. And you certainly don't associate seed treatments with creating any yield drag situation. So that's kind of a good thing. At least you're starting off at, all right, it's not going to be any worse than what you've got. And it could certainly help you, especially like you mentioned, as you're seeing more reproduction on these resistant varieties. That's definitely something that we can work on.
It's sort of like doctors. We have an oath we take, and it's do no harm with your seed treatment. There's certainly lots of things we can help on and control, but obviously you're correct. We do not want to do any drag. And we want to give people some of the easiest options. So number one, you choose that correct variety. Number two, adding a seed treatment nematicide like Aveo EZ from Valent is a really easy option. Our product has a super low use rate, so it's not going to change how you're treating. It's a standalone product, so it's going to work with any of the systems that you might have or currently using, or even if you're switching, you can add a Aveo EZ into it, and it'll colonize the root and grow with that plant. And that's one of the other challenges is with SCN, we're dealing with a season-long problem, and you don't usually think seed treatment and season-long in the same sentence. But with a biological that grows with the plant, you can achieve some season-long results.
You know, that's an interesting point too, Dare, because I've done soybean cyst nematode soil testing, and I've seen populations going up and down throughout the year. And a lot of times growers would say, oh, okay, the population's backing off now. Now it's going down. That means it's not coming back up. Wrong answer. It's probably going to flare back up a little bit later in the season. And as you mentioned, if we've got something that grows with that plant and with the root system, that's an excellent way to keep up with nematodes throughout the season.
And these things are so insidious because of multiple reasons. They have that capability for exponential growth. So even if it does go down a little bit, each of those cysts can pump out 250 eggs. So, you know, that's an issue right there. We're talking about the resistance as well. And those eggs can last for up to 10 years in your soil. So once you have it, it's something that you got to manage. And variety and seed treatment nematicides are some of the easiest ways that you can start chipping back against those numbers and getting this problem managed.
Okay, Dare, one more question for you. There are certainly a lot of other nematode species out there, and I know we've got a lot of growers in the South that are saying, what about root knot nematode? With products like Aveo, are you getting some help on other nematode species that are trouble as well?
Yes, we do. And that is something that you do want to look into. Some products are specific to certain nematodes. With Aveo, we've got great data on SCN, on root knot, southern or northern, and reniform, which are three of the biggest. Also use the product on corn with lesions, so it works on multiple crops. And I would say if anyone has any additional concerns or questions, that we work with a group called the SCN Coalition, and that is their website, SCNCoalition.com. They've got great bite-sized videos with some of the best experts in the country, and that's a great place to learn more about SCN.
Great tips. Talking with Dare McDuffie here with Valent. Dare, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Thank you.
All right, I've got Tim Dahl with us right now. He works with Syngenta over in Minnesota. Tim, we're talking about soybean cyst nematode, and I know the territory you cover, this is a big concern, and even guys further north now are starting to see some pretty high nematode numbers.
No, you're absolutely right, and we've done quite a bit of sampling over the years, and actually, you know, some of the areas that you mentioned really a few years ago saw pretty robust numbers when we were sampling. So, yep, pretty much all over.
Well, what was interesting to me, too, I was traveling through northern Minnesota in the summer of 2019, just talking with growers about nematodes, looking at some nematode test results that had come back. And there are growers that had planted soybeans several years in a row, and that was very unusual for them. But just the market conditions had kind of dictated, and the way the wheat crop had turned out, they'd kind of gotten into just growing soybeans for a while. And this is one of the prices you have to pay for that. If we get back into those longer extended rotations, what have you seen for the guys that are doing a couple of small grain crops or corn and wheat in between their soybean rotation? Has that been working out significantly better?
Different cropping practices definitely make a difference. And you know, when we try and control pests like soybean cyst nematode, it's really a multi-pronged approach. And you've had, you know, callers discuss that. Crop rotation is definitely one of those systems. Years ago, when we started seeing the numbers explode, the area that I used to work, you talked about further north, we were in a soybean and then, actually a double crop system. We'd put the early peas and then come back with soybeans. And those are some of the fields where we really saw the numbers explode. And then, like you said, multiple years of soybeans, that number really got crazy fast.
All right. There are a lot of different choices in terms of seed treatment options for some help with soybean cyst nematode. And I know, you know, with Syngenta, you've got a couple of those options you work closely with. What have you noticed and what kind of trial work have you seen done?
Yeah. So, our most recent offering that you're referencing would be the Saltro seed treatment. And Saltro is a really unique product. It was, brought on here recently. We had a lot of trials out last year, a lot of university trials, and it was brought on as an SDS product, right? Sudden death syndrome. And sudden death syndrome in soybeans, one of the ways that we talk about, you know, managing that disease is managing SCN, right? That's one of the compounding or exacerbating circumstances. When we have cyst, we get a lot of SDS. But we have found that Saltro seed treatment, although it is a fungicide, and I won't get into the how a fungicide can affect a nematode, but they do have some of the same biological processes. And so Saltro is one of the products that's very effective at controlling not only SDS but the soybean cyst nematode, along with, like your previous caller mentioned, root knot, lesion, you know, some of the other nematodes that are out there affecting the crop as well.
Well, it is pretty nice when you can use one product to solve multiple problems. And like you mentioned, the sudden death syndrome, that was something also that made it a lot further north in the United States than it has in the past, at least to my knowledge. So, yeah, you're right. If we get the right products out there at the right time, we can certainly do a lot of help. Talking with Tim Dahl here with Syngenta. Tim, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
Thank you very much.
Talking about soybean cyst nematode and some tools in your toolbox to manage them on today's Ag PhD program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
A lot goes into keeping a precision operation moving. The inputs you choose have to deliver results. New Dallaro Complete Fungicide from Bayer offers unmatched consistency and the most complete disease control available. Your corn and soybeans are protected and yields higher even in unpredictable conditions. With Dallaro Complete, you get results you can count on to help keep your precision operation running smoothly. Always read and follow label instructions. To learn more, visit DallaroComplete.us today.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply EndoPrime SC. MycoApply EndoPrime SC uses 4 specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply EndoPrime SC at EndoPrimeCorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
It's about time. Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind in-furrow Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about a problem that if you raise soybeans, you probably have, and you're most likely aware of. It's soybean cyst nematode. But what are you doing about it? What are you doing differently than you've done for the last 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? If your answer is nothing, then I'm glad you're listening to today's program, because we are seeing more soybean cyst nematodes able to reproduce on what's termed as resistant soybean varieties, because the same strains of resistance that we've been using in soybeans for the last 20 plus years are starting to fail. And they should, because they've been out forever and we haven't been doing much else to help them. I got Sam Markell with us right now with North Dakota State University. Sam, first of all, people are probably shocked to hear, what? North Dakota State University talking about soybean cyst nematode? But it's a real problem in your state, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's been expanding for the last 10, 15 years here, and we have it in 24 counties right now. And you know, you often don't think about North Dakota as a huge soybean growing state, you know, compared to Iowa or Illinois. But, you know, last year we had almost 6 million acres, and, you know, we've got SCN in almost half our counties.
Yeah, and I also think about North Dakota as there are so many different crops grown there that you would think there's enough rotation, but you're right. You drive through big areas of North Dakota, and it really looks like Iowa. It's corn and soybean fields everywhere.
It really does. That southeast corner is really pretty productive. It's probably the most productive land we have in the state, and yeah, it really does look like an I state. It really does. Yeah, we do have the ability to diversify that rotation, but you know, when it comes down to economics and how production practices are right now, it's pretty corn soybean heavy in the Southeast.
Look at where soybean prices are right now, and that does not bode well for working another crop into that rotation, at least for the 2021 growing season. So talk to us a little bit about the SCN coalition and what's going on with that and what you're talking to North Dakota growers about now.
Yeah, and your intro was perfect. You know, if you haven't changed how you've thought about SCN or what you're doing in the last 20 years, you really should start to think about it because SCN has changed. So the SCN Coalition came about a few years ago, and the whole concept is it's a public-private partnership. So the universities, the major ag chemical companies are working together to try to get the message out that this resistance that we've been using, it's 88788 is what it's called, it's just not holding up as well as it used to. The nematode is changing. It's adapting to it. And so the SCN Coalition really has a mission to try to get growers on the same page, to get the idea out there that there are active management strategies that you really need to be thinking about. And it's not just as simple as throwing a resistant variety in and then rotating with corn or wheat. You have to really, to maximize your yield, you have to deal with this a little bit more intentionally.
Yeah, you sure do. And like you mentioned, we've gotten conditioned to, well, the companies will come up with something, the universities will come up with something, and we can just keep doing what we're doing. The problem isn't going to come so fast that a new solution won't happen. Well, we've spent a lot of years working on PI88788 soybean varieties, and I know the breeders, I talk to them a lot. They're working on trying to find other things, but it's not quite so easy, and nematodes are a tough problem.
Yeah, it really is. The breeding for resistance for this is particularly problematic because it's not like one gene, you know, like we talk about Phytophthora resistance, and you can put in the K gene or the 6 gene or whatever. It's a single gene, but with 88788, it's actually a combination of genes. And so when you're trying to breed in resistance that has a whole bunch of little genes, just by breeding, you're probably going to lose some of those in the process. And so sometimes you don't have as many genes as you think you do in a resistant variety, and then the nematode is starting to adapt to the ones you do have. So it's a complex problem, and to get another source of resistance in, like we do have some Peking, and Syngenta just announced a new one, it takes a long time. It just takes time.
Okay, speak about Syngenta. We were just talking with Tim Dahl over in Minnesota, and we were talking a little bit about SDS, sudden death syndrome, and how that moved a lot farther north this year too. And oftentimes we see SDS in fields where we've got soybean cyst nematode pressure that's pretty heavy, but not always. It isn't always a one-to-one correlation there. Did you see a lot of SDS in North Dakota, and was it at all attributed to, hey, if we've got nematodes, this added stress got much, much worse?
Yeah, so we didn't find sudden death in North Dakota until 2018. So like SCN, this thing, it's expanding in areas where we were growing soybeans, and it tends to follow SCN, you know, maybe by a decade or so. That's what we saw. But to answer your question specifically, yeah, we did. We saw it blow up in North Dakota. We actually confirmed it in one county along the Canadian border. And so that was a big jump for us, SDS. We'd only seen it before in the southeast corner. And when you do have those two together, SDS and SCN, you do tend to take a much higher yield hit. And like you said, you can get them one at a time, but boy, when they get together, you can have some major problems.
We're talking with Sam Markell at North Dakota State University about soybean cyst nematode and sudden death syndrome. And I get it. If you're saying, wow, I can't believe it, we've got these problems literally about everywhere soybeans are grown now, it's true. So you can't just hide and say, well, I'm in North Dakota or I'm in northern Minnesota, I don't have to worry about these problems. They are real, and they are hitting your area. Sam, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Are there any last comments you want to leave growers with about soybean cyst nematodes or anything else going into 2021?
You know, I think I would encourage growers, if they have a minute, to take a look at www.thescncoalition.com. We've got a whole bunch of videos and resource information that you could draw from to help make decisions for this upcoming season.
It is really an excellent website and a lot of really good work. Sam, thanks for the work you're doing. Really appreciate having you on.
Thank you for having me.
You know, Brian, a bunch of different people here that we've had on have mentioned the SCN Coalition. I would strongly recommend go to that website, check those things out, because there's a lot more that you can do trying to manage nematodes than just, oh, I got to pick the right variety and I'll be fine. Or even, oh, I'm going to plant a Peking bean, so I'm going to solve this thing that way. That is one nice approach. But having a couple of different things, just like with everything else we're doing, whether it's controlling weeds or diseases or different things, we want to take a couple of different stabs at it to try to reduce it as much as we can.
A couple I agree with. You said a lot, though, and I don't see that there are a lot of great options for cyst nematode. What I'd really like, Darren, is just like bugs. Okay, we have a bug problem. What do? We go spray an insecticide. We kill all the bugs. I wish that there was a safe nematicide that we could go out, spray in our fields, and kill the harmful soybean cyst nematodes without killing some of the beneficial nematodes that are in our soils. But at this point, we don't have that. So that's what I really wish we had.
Well, when we think about the crop rotation, this is one thing too, and I've talked to a number of farmers in the I states especially that when they've gotten a bad problem with nematodes, said, you know what, I just went to corn for 3 or 4 years.
That's
or
how I
put alfalfa on that field, and I knew for the next 4 years those things weren't going to have a host. But here's the other thing, Brian. There are some weeds out there that can be host to nematodes too.
Yes.
So even if you're doing the crop rotation thing in an extreme way, make sure you're doing an awesome job on weed control so you don't have anything, any spot where those nematodes can reproduce.
Yeah, and that's how I opened the show today, just saying, hey, worst case scenario, just go plant corn or wheat or some non-host crop for maybe 3 years. And I know you might not really want to do that, but when we do that, we very often find that the yields in the soybeans come right back. And we go, wow, this was actually pretty awesome. So if you can handle continuous corn or wheat, or like Darren said, maybe you throw it into alfalfa for just a little bit, some non-host crop, and then just make sure you control the weeds, that's a really good way to go.
You know, the other thing that I would just mention is all these things come with a cost. So we've talked about a few of the different seed treatments, and you say, oh boy, they want to charge me $10. They want to charge me $15 for that. Do look at what else you're going to get on some of these. Like we were talking with Tim Dahl with Syngenta about Saltro, and when you've got a fantastic product for sudden death syndrome, that adds a big benefit for you that, okay, yeah, you might be using that product as,
right,
I need to reduce my nematode, but I'm also getting sudden death syndrome protection. So don't put all that investment on, well, I got to get this much more in nematode reduction. No, it would be great if you could, but if it also helps you out with another benefit like sudden death syndrome protection, that's a big deal. All right, we'll talk a little bit more about nematodes. We've got a bunch of questions to get to in the Ag PhD mailbag, and we'll get to some of those right after this. Stay tuned.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
When it comes to innovative herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Panther, Credit Extreme, and Cheetah for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these challenging times, we know you're under pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Got resistant weeds? Add Tough 5EC as your post-emergence tank mix partner to deliver the knockout punch to Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds, especially resistant strains. Tough 5EC is manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, an agrochemical company focused on providing innovative products with strong technical support. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Been talking about soybean cyst nematodes, but getting some other questions in. Brian, a lot of the questions here coming up about soils. This one comes from Keith, and he said, thanks for your help with my soil test down from a field down in the Texas Hill Country, which is a mixture of rocks and soil. The CEC is 17.9, and I'm going to be broadcasting my fertilizer here this next weekend. And he said, my question is, if I plant something like a daikon radish, will it take in immobile nutrients that are in the top 1 or 2 inches, like P and K and zinc, and will it spread them out over time below the ground as the radishes decompose and so forth?
Well, I'd say that's wishful thinking. I really would.
It will, so, a little bit.
A little bit. Here's the thing. When we start talking about these nutrients that are stratified, if let's say that they're in the top inch, can you get those recovered with a lot of different plants? Sure you can. What we worry about most is when it's literally laying on the soil surface or down, let's call it a tenth of an inch. There aren't a lot of roots that are growing there. It's hard to get anything in because that area dries out quite often. It's more of a challenge. So when the roots are down in the soil, and they are kicking out organic acids, chelating agents, basically, and they're turning nutrients into really available forms for the plant. A lot of that is happening down at the 4 to 8 inch depth with most crops. But again, it's certainly possible in the top 1 inch. It's going to happen. It just doesn't happen as much as what we would like. And so that's what we worry about. But to think that, let's say a radish, okay, if you're just going to leave it out there, it's going to break down. Where are some of those nutrients going to be? It's going to pull in some of those nutrients, absolutely. But where is it going to leave them at exactly? Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of stuff that's still growth above ground, and all that is going to break down, and then it's going to be laying in the soil surface again. There will be roots and basically that radish breaking down below ground, though, so that's good. And yeah, it'll move down a little bit. I mean, you could basically take some nutrients from, let's say, the top inch and get them down to 2, 3, 4 inches a little bit. So it's fine. It's just, for me, here's the whole thing. I get frustrated because I want things to happen now. And it's so slow with some of these processes. So if you want to do it, you certainly can. It's going to help. But don't think that's going to change everything and going to change everything immediately. So, like for me, I'd rather inject my fertilizer down deeper. We do a lot of strip till. That way I get the fertilizer down deeper and it's exactly where I want it. Or, worst case scenario, if you want to broadcast and then do some tillage to get it down in the ground, you certainly can do that. I mean, there definitely are options besides this, but could that help? Yes.
All right. Thanks for that question. We appreciate that. Get this one from Dan, and he is in Iowa. And his question is, he's picking soybeans based on defensive traits. He's got SDS and white mold, so he's kind of limited on how many varieties are really good on both of those. He said he's got a 2.1 maturity bean and a 2.4, 2.5 bean. And he's wondering, could he plant those in the same field? Would you have any issues with disease or insect pressure hitting at different times or combining the beans? Do you think it'd be significantly different in their maturity?
Yes, and, it will. Most likely.
Got a couple other things here with soils too.
Yeah, so I mean, I would just put them in certain areas. So I would do, let's say, the 2.1s around the end of the field and then the 2.4 out in the middle of the field. Or take the 2.1s, plant them as far as you can, and actually do end rows for that part at the end or something. So basically, you've got the 2.1s totally separate from the 2.4s. But theoretically, the 2.1 should be able to combine earlier. But the seed companies often don't know for sure, depending on the year. This year, for example, on our farm, we had some that were that much different, combined exactly the same time, planted at the same time. So it might all work out. It's hard to say.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine, and I do think it's a good idea to spread your maturity risk a little bit anyway, way to go.
I'm all for that. All I'm saying is don't have the 2.4s around your end rows, and all of a sudden then you can't get into the 2.1s if they were to be ready earlier.
Okay, there's one other comment that he left on here, and I wanted to talk about this for just a second. He said, soil is a silty loam, CECs averaging 15 to 17. Both P and K are low, but we have a plan to correct that while the pH is fine in the 6 to 7 range. So if you're building up P and K at this point, I think that's great. And what I was going to get to here, Brian, is he was just talking about, I'm picking beans for their defensive characteristics. And as I get fertility, what we found, as we get fertility more in line, a lot of the defensive things come into line for us. Now, white mold is definitely, and SDS are exceptions to that, that could still be a problem even in high fertility ground. But, boy, a lot of the stress-related things that we saw in 2020 with heat and drought and those kinds of things, when we got fertility balanced, we were able to tolerate them much better. So, yeah, I totally agree with you, Dan. Keep working on those. Pick those beans to make sure they fit your defensive traits, and you're going to see them yield really well.
Now, I look at SDS and white mold a lot different. With white mold, when you have the fertility really high, especially nitrogen, then we can have more problems. But to your point, we want to make sure we have really good potassium levels and really good manganese levels. So those are keys for white mold. With SDS, I look more at drainage and then all the micronutrients. We want to have a really good balance of nutrients out there so the plants are more tolerant to all diseases. But drainage is an enormous key with sudden death syndrome. So just make sure you have great drainage and you're looking at all the micronutrients and not overdoing it with nitrogen, which you shouldn't be with, I mean, obviously soybeans and let's call it medium textured ground. I'm not too worried about nitrogen carryover or anything. So anyway, it certainly sounds like he's on the right path.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. We got Dell with us up in Michigan. Let's talk a little soybean cyst nematode. Dell, how you doing?
Fine. I missed your opening statement, and you may have already answered it. If so, I apologize. What's the optimum spacing, row spacing, and population for soybeans to control nematodes? That's our subject today.
All right. Yep, thanks for the question there, Dell. So, Darren, I don't know that I would say spacing and population make all that much difference when it comes to cyst nematode. I don't think I've ever seen any research showing me that a low population or high population will help, a wider row or a narrower row will help. I don't think so.
Anything you can do to reduce stress on the plants.
Yep.
So, for example, if you have a year where you get an inch of rain every week and your plants never have moisture stress, your impact on yield loss with SCN is pretty low. But if you have a year where you miss rains for a month and it's been hot, you lose more. So I just look at any of the other stresses. So if you had high pH, a lot of times what growers will say is if I plant a higher population in those areas, I have less stress from the high pH because I've got more roots. They're kicking out more organic acids into the soil, and I don't see IDC. So if you said on your farm in Michigan, you've got high pH and high populations reduce stress on your plants, then I would say high populations would be good in the face of soybean cyst nematodes. But I don't know. I've heard a few growers speculate that, okay, let's say I have 10,000 soybean cyst nematode eggs per 100 cc's of soil, 10,000. If I've got way more plants out there, that's less nematodes per plant. And I don't know if that's the right way to look at that or not, but I do understand that reasoning. And the other thing that they've said is, and if I put a nematode seed treatment on, now I've got that much more of that product potentially out there.
Well,
but
true.
I guess, I don't
know. But you're also spending a little bit more money too. So here's our point, Del. We would say population and row spacing usually is not going to help a whole lot. I'd rather see, number one, a resistant bean, number two, seed treatment, or better than both of those things, obviously, is to go away from soybeans for just a couple, 3 years, and that's definitely going to help reduce that population of nematodes.
All right. Thanks a lot for the question, Del. We really appreciate that. We've got a number of questions in the Ag PhD mailbag that we'll dive back into right after this short break. If you would like to ask an agronomic question, you can give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com. And if you're sending in soil tests or manure sample tests, those types of things, that's a great way to do it. We'll be right back after this.
The only innovation that matters is the one I need.
With NK Seeds, their R&D program actually listens to farmers like me, so I get solutions that solve my challenges.
With the support to make them count. Because progress means pushing my potential, and success matters.
Push your potential at nkseeds.com.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We are right in a part of the show that we call the Ag PhD Mailbag Time, where we take your calls and agronomic questions. Our phone lines are open at 844 44AGPHD, and you can email us, radio@agphd.com. It's exactly what Nicholas did from Ontario, Canada. He said, I really enjoy listening to your podcast. I've got a follow-up question to your last week's discussion on CEC, or cation exchange capacity. If I broadcast my MAP or DAP next spring with no tillage, how much of the phosphorus will be available to next year's corn crop?
Very
I've got a cation exchange capacity of 20, a pH of 7.2, and a P1 test of 12 parts per million. We receive about 15 inches of rain, 1.5 inches of rain in a normal growing season.
Yep, very little will be available to the crop. I'd say 10%, maybe 20%.
Okay, so let's just say that you do that every year.
Yep.
So every year, I just broadcast more MAP or DAP on top of the ground. Then what would your answer be? So you've been doing this for 10 years. Would you say, oh, okay, well, now you're going to get 100% of what you put out there 10 years ago or 100%
yeah,
of what you put out
might,
there
yeah,
two or
might,
3 years ago?
It might be close to that, but let's keep in mind that what you put out 10 years ago has only gone down 1 inch. That's probably it. So at 1 inch, you have a very tiny percentage of your roots and a tiny percentage of the soil moisture. We say it all the time, and I just said it in the last segment. When you really study corn roots, where the biggest mass is going to be, is how I should phrase this, is in the 4 to 8 inch range. That's where I'd like to get my fertility down to. You've got more moisture down there, more chance for moisture. Think about that top inch. It's going to dry out. And if it dries out, well, there's nothing getting into the plant. So it doesn't do any good to have fertility where there's no moisture. So I'm just saying, you can certainly do this, but I mean, it's going to be a really long time. It's not a very efficient way to invest your dollars. Instead, what I'd rather see you do is use a strip till machine or just some kind of machine with a coulter or do something or a shank, whatever, and put it down in the ground. So you have a much better chance for uptake this year on those dollars. But I mean, if you want to invest for, you know, 10 years down the road, I mean, the United States is a free country, and you can certainly put your fertilizer on that way in most counties.
All right, thanks for the question. Got this one from DM, who said, how do you kill cypress vine? And that's one that we don't fight up here on our farm. I looked up just to see if it was a perennial for sure, and I got mixed reviews online. Some said, nope, it's only an annual. But other spots were saying, no, it's definitely a perennial vine. I would tend to lean towards believing it's more like a perennial. It's in the morning glory family. A few of the things that I found. So the organic guys are going with frequent cuttings. And when they've got a vine like that, if they can keep cutting it off so it doesn't have any leaves coming out above the ground, there's no way for it to start drawing in sunlight, and eventually it runs out of energy. They say it takes a while, and it takes a lot of handwork to make that happen. You could certainly do that. Otherwise, when it comes to vines, sometimes Roundup can work really, really well. The problem is where the vines are located. So that would be my question, DM, and you didn't ask that, of where exactly they are located. If they're out in a cultivated field, my answer would be Roundup. If they're in a grassy area, boy, then you're probably looking at something like a chaparral.
2,4-D or dicamba.
Yeah,
yep, 2,4-D or dicamba are going to ding it up pretty good. And will that control it with one application? No way. You're going to have to use multiple applications. So yeah, it's usually we're talking Roundup, otherwise 2,4-D, dicamba, something like that. Darren mentioned chaparral. Certainly there are other products that are going to have activity like Tordon, Distinct. So it's just unfortunate that none of those are going to do fantastically well on the whole thing in one application other than Roundup.
All right, I get a question from Roger in Kansas. He said, I've got 140 acres of irrigated triticale that this fall I am grazing 290 head of cattle on it, and we started October 1st doing that. I think there's enough forage out there they'll be able to graze until January 1st, and then maybe a couple months in the spring before going to soybeans. Do you have any information on what I could expect for the manure value on a per cow per month basis out there? Well, that's an interesting question, Roger. I love converting residue into manure. I think that's fantastic because I think you're going to get nutrients that'll be available a little sooner. Oh. The problem with the manure, though, too, is you've got some ammonia that's going to leave. So you're going to lose a little bit of that nitrogen value.
Yeah, that. But where I was going to go with it is now it's spotty. I mean, just imagine if your fertilizer spreader was not working very well at all, and you just had clumps of fertilizer that were getting sporadically distributed across your field. Well, that's basically what's happening with this manure situation. Now, certainly if you're going to till it, then that's going to help even it out. But still, that's one of the challenges with having livestock out there running around grazing. So what would it be exactly? Boy, I really don't know. I don't have any statistics on that or anything else. Is it going to help? Sure. Would I count on that for most of my fertility program? Probably not, but let's put it this way. Okay, you're raising this crop, and I want you to think about how did you start in terms of fertility for that triticale in the beginning. If you started and you said, boy, I've got really good fertility levels on everything, okay, when you're not taking anything off the field, it's all basically converting back into manure for the most part, then your soil levels aren't going to change a whole lot other than this. You've now taken below ground fertility and moved it to the soil surface with that manure without any type of tillage. So that would be a concern for the non-mobile nutrients like phosphorus, potassium, zinc, and copper.
All right, thanks for the questions. We really appreciate that. I got this from Ed in Indiana. He said, you guys have mentioned humic acid and fulvic acid on the show before.
Yep.
I'm wondering, what's the difference between the two, and when can they be applied in corn?
So they can be applied just about any time. We usually talk about humic as the darker material and fulvic as a little more golden. Fulvic is a smaller molecule than humic. Now, a lot of states consider them one and the same, and our state of South Dakota doesn't believe in humic or fulvic, so they won't even label humic or fulvic in our state, and I believe we're the only state in the United States that won't label it, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. So anyway, we can talk about that another day. But in terms of when we normally would recommend those, with the humic, we look at that more as a soil conditioner. So humic, we're usually talking about an application in the fall or most likely spring, a lot of times broadcast, could be done in furrow too. But when we're talking fulvic, then a lot of times we are going either a little bit in furrow or we're doing some type of foliar application. And we have found a little bit better uptake of some of the foliar nutrients. Let's say you're doing a foliar fertilizer and you want to throw some nitrogen out or, you know, some potassium or zinc or something, then we would say, you know what, maybe you could put a little bit of fulvic acid with it. We have seen a little bit better uptake into the plant. And that's one of the things I know a lot of the high yield farmers will end up talking about here in the United States as well.
All right, thanks for the question. Got this from Brandon, and he said, I've heard you guys talk about a potential soils conference coming up in January or early winter here. Also talking about Neil Kinsey coming back. I'm wondering what your plans are for those meetings. Are you still going to have them? Is there going to be an online resource as well?
Okay, so we are just about to put this out. We don't even have it on our website yet, but I will say in our next Ag PhD magazine, we just made the announcement that we originally had some dates down in January to do several workshops. Well, we're changing that. So we are doing, I believe it's January 13th here. Give me just one second. It's a Wednesday, January 13th. We are doing a corn agronomy workshop. On Wednesday, February 3rd, we are doing a soybean agronomy workshop. Neil Kinsey is going to be here on February 23rd through the 25th, and then we are going to have a tiling clinic March 16th. So those are going to be our winter workshops, all at the Morton Center, right at the site of the Ag PhD Field Day, which hopefully we will be doing next July. But anyway, that's right at our farm near Baltic, South Dakota, right by Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And you can just go to agphd.com for more information. We are going to limit, at least for our first couple of workshops, we're going to limit to 150 in person. If you want to see online, just subscribe to the Ag PhD Insider magazine. Go to agphdinsider.com for more, and then you can watch online.
Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that, Brandon. Thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.